are listening to a free version of the Majority Report with Sam Steeter. To support this show and get another 15 minutes of daily program, go to majority.fm, please.
The Majority Report with Sam Steeter, where every day's casual Friday. That means Monday is casual Monday. Tuesday, casual Tuesday. Wednesday, casual hump day. Thursday, casual Thurs. That's what we call it. And Friday, casual Shabbat. The Majority Report with Sam Steeter.
It is Friday, December 11th, 2015. My name is Sam Steeter. This is the four-time award-winning Majority Report. We are broadcasting live steps from the industrially ravaged Gowanus Canal in the heartland of America, downtown Brooklyn, USA. It's Casual Friday, folks. The week just flew by as the insanity mounted upon the insanity to make some semblance of sanity out of the insanity, to bring order to the chaos. Joining us, as he does on most Fridays, Cliff Schechter will be here. And perhaps to add to the chaos, Andy Kindler will come on to ostensibly give me a movie recommendation. Find out what Andy is mad about these days. He's mad at everyone. Also on the program today, a contested convention. Republicans are contemplating it. However, that has caused Ben Carson to threaten to leave the Republican Party.
I am with it.
If they engage in any shenanigans. Meanwhile, Democrats force a vote on whether or not people on the terrorist watch list can buy guns. Volkswagen says, this is going to come as a shocker, their emission scandal, their cheating was not a one-time error.
You know that whole global scam, that whole global regulatory evasion we ran for years? Not a one-off.
It was.
Just FYI.
We thought it was a total coincidence. Turns out not a total coincidence.
Or, forgive me. Yeah, if we did it for the parts.
Yeah, it's... Look, it's like salted peanuts. Speaking of which, Ted Cruz, I don't know why I said salted peanuts. Ted Cruz ahead in Iowa. New audio shows that, well, I mean, Ted Cruz has a plan, and I guessed his plan, it turns out, almost 12 months ago. Almost 12 months. Actually, probably 11 months to the day. I'm on record as there's also I'm sorry for folks on the University of Texas. Turns out that mock mass shooting, that gun rights people, open carry folks, we're going to promote. Turns out UT Texas is not going to allow it on their campus. Sorry about that. You're going to have to go across the street where the open rights ammo sexuals will be pulling out their turgid death penises, I guess is what they call them, right? Is that what it is?
Turgid death penises.
That sounds like
a band that you would listen to.
Turgid death penises.
The turgid death penises.
Yes, and yeah. They will be mock, I guess, ejaculating their turgid death penises.
I hope they don't mock ejaculate. That will harm a lot of people.
Mock ejaculate.
See. Okay.
And also, whatever happened to that Senate torture report? Guess what? They may actually just throw it away and burn it before anybody reads it.
You know that whole CIA spying on the Senate and breaking the law to disrupt the process of that report getting made to begin with?
Bygones. Bygones.
All good.
Bygones. They're gonna, you know what they're gonna do? They're just gonna give it to Henry Kissinger. He'll read it once and then he'll burn it. That's the way they're gonna do it.
Give it a quick look over. Give it
everything's
over.
Fine.
I'll do a one over.
Everything's fine.
Oh, really? You did that to the guy? That's kind of funny. Okay. That's to take me to my jet.
That's basically it. And he's going to have like a, they're actually going to bring him, he's going to get one of those VIP rooms at like a club down in Soho. They're going to get him a table, like a vodka table, right? Is that what they do? They bring out the bottle of vodka for like $700.
Yep.
He'll take one glass of it while he reads the report, throw the rest of the bottle away. And if he catches any of the waiters trying to drink from the bottle, he will literally take it from their hand, pour it out on the floor, throw it away.
Lick it from the floor.
That's the point. He paid lick for the whole $900 bottle of vodka, and nobody else is going to get
it. Lick it from the floor.
Folks, let me tell you something. Right now, it's December 11th. And that means we are coming very close to the end of the year. Another year, another incredibly successful year for the Majority Report. We won another podcast award, arguably two, because they seem to have skipped a year. And I don't think they've quite gotten to that. We have a trophy saying 2015, best podcast of 2015. There was no 2014, apparently. Because we won 2011, 12, 13. I thought we were going in the running for 14. There was no winner in 14. They skipped it. Doesn't matter. The point being that this was such a successful year for us that we basically won best podcast of the year for 2 years in this 1 year. That's how good it was. So it's almost impossible for us, there just being four of us in this office, it's almost impossible for us to pick out what is the best shows of the year. And so we need your help. Send us an email at majorityreporters@gmail.com. You can tweet, you can Facebook, that's all good. But the best way to do it is to email us. Put best of in the subject line. Tell us which interviews you thought were best. You can rank four of them, okay? And or you can say like, oh, I loved the call with somebody said Jim from PA, right? Where he, what do you call me, like a bloody coward or something?
Coward.
Right. Okay.
Left wing Limbaugh.
Some people actually said that they wanted Doug, but I don't know. I don't think quite gets to the level of
ooh.
It. I mean, with all due respect,
I think
to
Ted Nugent call might be up there. Personally, I thought that was explaining the scenario through which he would.
Some people like the one where I argued with that guy and insisted that we should be able to have our own rocket launchers.
That's a stealth favorite.
That's my point, ladies and gentlemen. There's so much best of this program. But we only have time to do like five shows, maybe six best ofs. So we can't possibly. So we need your help. Go through the archives. If you have the app, one way to do it is if you have the app and you're a member, you can actually just scroll through all of them. If you're not a member, you can only look at the past 50 shows. And that doesn't, on this program, we do 50 shows. That takes us back to like maybe September. So, help us out. Also, don't forget, you can become a member by joining the Majority Report by going to jointhemajorityreport.com. Jointhemajorityreport.com, or you go to majority.fm, you click on Become a Member. It is really the members who make, not really, I mean, I don't even make this sound qualified. If it weren't for the members, that's the but for. There'd be no show, period. And, you know, we need new members to come in. Because, you know, some people can't continue to afford it. Some people move away, like I'm going to Amsterdam and I'm not going to have time there because I'm riding my bike every... I don't know what they're doing. We get weird emails saying why they can't be members anymore.
That's true.
And you can become a member and support this program. Also, justcoffee.coop, fair trade coffee, tea, or chocolate. Use the coupon code MAJORITY, get 10% off. It makes for a great gift. Also, if you're buying crap from Amazon... for this holiday or for any time, go to majoritypreportkickback.com, click on the link, bookmark it, buy all your crap from there. We get a kickback. Thus, majorityreportkickback.com. We're going to take a quick break. When we come back, Cliff Schechter. Ladies and gentlemen, as you know, today is a Friday, and on Fridays on this program, if everything is going properly, we speak to the man who inspired this song.
Cliff Schechter, Libertas LLC, New Media, Public Relations, and Strategy. You want any of these services, you know who you gotta see. Cliff Schechter, Libertas LLC.
Yes, the Jimmy Griefer cake, Cliff Schechter theme song. Cliff Schechter is speaking to us from a lobby of a some type of hotel in Columbus, Ohio, as he meets with important organizations. Ohio, of course, a big battleground state in 2016. And
groups that want to win, Sammy. It's a big conspiracy. It's like a Koch brothers meeting, you know, with lots of less money and more hair on their heads.
Yes, there you go. And I would imagine a slightly more diverse group of people than one might find at a Koch brothers conference.
It's not what's known in the Koch brothers meetings where you're like, you know, you can say, hey, can you ask an African-American to come over here? Which is also the same way of saying, can you ask the waiter to come over here?
Mm.
Here, we actually, you know, go beyond that and think that people are smart no matter who they are. We're a little bit different than, let's say, Justice Scalia. We allow people to come here that haven't just taken the slow classes.
Yeah.
Clearly, any non-white person, or I would say non-white Christian straight person, should be taking so that they can someday aspire to have the keen intellect of Justice Scalia.
Now, I should say, Cliff is referencing something that Justice Scalia said in the context of the oral arguments about affirmative action. And we're hoping, I think by Tuesday, we're going to have somebody on the program to talk about those oral arguments and to break down the affirmative action case, which is a California versus Fisher. I can't remember exactly what the specific name of the case is.
I think this one is Texas, isn't it?
Texas versus Fisher, yes.
Yeah.
So we will talk about that on Tuesday. So, but let's go to something where I think you and I are going to have a little bit of an argument about. And then
let's rumble, baby.
And then we will go on to talk about. You know, you and I have not had the opportunity to talk about the fact that Trump went full on fascistic. I think is probably the way that I like
it.
But we'll get to that in a minute. We will get to that in a minute.
Yes.
Let's start with this. The Democrats have been attempting to push through a bill. Will you tell us what that bill is? And then,
well, there's a few. I'm assuming you're talking about the terror watch list bill.
Exactly.
And what that bill is to say that if somebody is on a terror watch list, which means that they're suspected of engaging in terroristic activity, having connections with terrorists, you know, money, having gotten money from terrorists, these kinds of things, that there would be a holdup when they went and tried to buy a firearm so that we can determine if they are really people who should be able to buy that firearm. And to give people an example, if you're on that list, you're not actually allowed to get on an airplane. So we have determined that you're too dangerous to board an airplane, perfectly fine to buy an assault weapon, a weapon of war that can mow down 50, 75 people in no time. And that's the difference. And I will let you come to me with your objections so I can, because I know what you're going to say, and I don't fully disagree with you. I come at it from a different angle. So why don't I let you go for
what
you're going
to... Well, the first thing I will say is that factually, I don't think what you just said was accurate. Because the terror watch list, my understanding is that...
You're really picking a fight with me already, huh, buddy?
I'm going right after you on this. I mean, I think you and I are coming at this from similar vantage points in terms of our feeling that we need to deal with
guns. You're one
of those
wimpy Glenn Greenwald people who wants to defeat America. That's fine.
That's exactly right. I'm one of those emo progs. And I will say this at the end of this, I'm going to say that I still think there's a good move on some level. On some level, the terror watch list is something that is different from the no fly list. The no fly list is a subset of the terror watch list.
Yes.
According to the terrorist screening director, Chris Biota's testimony in 2014, there were 800,000 people on the terrorist watch list. There were 64,000 people on the no-fly list. 0.8% of those people, so about 6,400 or so, were Americans. So when we say terrorist watch list, we're not talking about people who can't fly. We're talking about people, a wide range of people. Who,
just so you know, that was more of a you and I having sort of what I would call more of a rhetorical difference, because when we talk about it, and I guess I'm, I have to be clear, you're right, I'm on the radio here with you, but within the gun violence policy community, we're always talking very specifically about the ones on the no-fly list.
But
so
I don't know
correct.
That the bill, frankly, that the Democrats are pushing is the no-fly list. I don't think that bill is specific enough of that. That's my understanding. That's one of the problems.
That is a very good. Okay.
That is one of the problems. Now, I also have a problem on some level with the idea of the no fly list being like, look, these are an airline can say you're too drunk, you cannot get on this airplane. You are too belligerent. You cannot get on this airplane. I find the no-fly list to be a little bit problematic, frankly, in and of itself, because there is no due process for this list now, and there is the way of getting off this list seems to be incredibly difficult and opaque. And
you need to go to see a judge, and it's not always easy to get an appointment, that kind of thing. I know what you're saying.
And look, I believe that we can come up with a million different reasons to deny people guns, as far as I'm concerned. I think we should deny all people guns. But every other mechanism in which we deny people the right to buy a gun, there is some due process, if I'm not mistaken. That is, you need to be certified in terms of mental health, or you need to have been convicted of a crime, which I'm not even sure I necessarily, but at least there is a process associated with that. My fear is...
That is not 100% accurate, but I'm going to let
okay.
you finish it.
All right, well, good. Tit for tat. So the problem with saying that terror watch list, we're going to do it with guns, because then tomorrow it's today it's guns, and then tomorrow it's driver's license, and then the day after that it's credit cards or whatever. That's my problem with it. Now, with that said, I like the politics behind this, because it's not going to pass.
Yes.
And
how can you not like it? They were forced to take a vote by a very smart Nancy Pelosi. It was a vote to not have a vote, but that can be used as a vote anyhow to say, these are the people that chose to say, no, we won't, because she forced through procedural methods for them to say, we're tabling that vote. And the people that voted to table the vote on it are people that essentially that didn't vote for it. So it's a very clear list now of Republicans, and there's already radio advertisements running in 10 Republican districts. And before I get to the other part of it, I love the politics of this, because I'm so tired of these guys who couldn't find bin Laden and didn't, you know, and invaded the wrong country and didn't read the briefings before 9/11, many of them, and all the stuff that these guys did. They're the stupidest fucking pardon my French, people alive when it comes to national security. And it just galls me that they can try to run as people who are strong on defense when they don't have a clue what they're doing and have been wrong every single time. So this gives us a way of pivoting and saying, not only are you completely cool with domestic terrorists and you won't even speak after somebody attacks a Planned Parenthood, because apparently if you're a white Christian, it's okay to kill people. On top of it, you're willing to sell anybody who has a terrorist association a gun. It's a great way to go after them and shut them up on these issues and really actually put them on the defensive. So that's the political part of it. Unless you have something else to say, I'll tell you why
no,
I agree with you.
No, go ahead. The policy please, part. Go.
Well, when it comes to the due process part, we do have other methods. And to me, you know, whether somebody has to actually go ahead and whether this has to happen in a court or, you know, you start to, in other words, we have to find a balance. What are all the rest of our rights? Right? There's a constitution. It guarantees in the very preamble the right to the general welfare and domestic tranquility. Clearly, we don't have domestic tranquility at this point. It also guarantees in a number of amendments my right to, you know, not be searched unconstitutionally, my right to my property, a variety of things. So, you know, when you're getting into this, these are all important parts of the Constitution that we're willing to throw overboard for all sorts of reasons. And in the case of guns, we're willing to ignore very many things so that the gun guys can get what they want. So let me go to a specific on the issue of that California passed something called a gun violence restraining order after the shooting in Santa Barbara. And that is if the police or a family member of yours notices that you are acting loopy and you're making threats or whatever, they can have your gun taken away from you. They can take your gun away from you for a couple of days. That you eventually get due process. You can get yourself before a judge. But in that, the onus is being put that they are looking to making a balance, you know, looking at, and the balance is our lives are more important. And if you for a couple of days have to be denied your gun, then it's more important for us to be safe, which to me is a fundamental statement about our society, which I think the terror
gap
makes.
But even that process you're describing is going to involve an affidavit signed by a family member or a police officer. I mean, we don't know. It's a black box, that terrorist thing.
Right.
That no-fly. It's a total black box. We can't see into it. We can't know what's happening. It is a permanent status. It's very difficult to get off. So that analogy does not...
So let me now make my okay. broader argument. That's sort of one piece of it. My broader argument is this. You don't have a right to a gun as an individual. We have, you know, right now, for 30 years in the beginning of the 20th century, around when we had a crazy right-wing court, the minimum wage and child labor laws and others were found unconstitutional. Eventually, when we got rid of right-wing ideologues and normal people joined the court again, that was overturned and we got back to what the history and values of this country were. Currently, we have a 5-4 majority. They couldn't even get 7 votes or 8 or anything, you know, the way you had a perfect vote on Brown versus Board. They enacted an enormous change. For 200 years, this whole thing about an individual right to a gun had been laughed out of court. Justice Warren Burger, Justice Burger was somebody who was a very conservative justice, came out and said, this is a fraud that the NRA is perpetrating. Many other conservative justices said the same thing. Many of the lower court justices who are conservative don't believe it. And all you could get was a 5-4 majority in the Supreme Court to completely overthrow 200 years of jurisprudence. So my point here is that if you look at, as anybody would who actually cared about originalism, unlike Scalia, who just says that he cares about it when it's convenient, you'd look at the fact that in any text you read from the late 18th century, you would find that the right to bear arms had everything to do with raising up and fighting in war, putting down rebellion. It had nothing to do with protecting yourself. It had nothing to do with hunting. It had nothing to do with sport shooting or carrying a gun with you. It had everything to do with that we had states that were agreeing to join a federal union, and we're saying that federal government cannot tell us that we can't raise a body of able, a group of able-bodied men to protect us in a well-regulated militia. That is very simply what the Second Amendment was about, what every historian worth anything will say. So with that said, the terror gap to me, it comes back to the same basic thing as most of my other opinions, which is it's based on a completely faulty situation currently that I believe, like with the minimum wage way back when, and like currently with Citizens United and with voting rights and other things they've overturned with a 5-4 majority where they've overthrown 50 years, 200 years, however many years of jurisprudence because they want it that way,
right,
not because it was meant to be that way. We will get back to that. And under that interpretation, you don't have the right to a gun as an individual.
Okay.
So if I'm deciding if I'm going to sell one to you and I suspect that you're a terrorist, I'm not selling it to you and I don't want anybody else to. My rights come first to live before your right to get your gun.
All right. I mean, I have an issue with that calculation because I could have a right winger on here to tell me that's exactly what they feel about abortion. And they don't think that that it should have been decided, you know, that the idea of the judicial fiat, right of privacy. I happen to agree with everything you said. I just don't know that the next thing follows. Now, with that said, let me say this. Here's the danger, okay? And it cuts both ways.
Yep.
Because if, let's just say I certainly would never wish this upon someone, or let me put it this way. I certainly would never say publicly on this program that I wish death upon a specific person. Well, let me rephrase that. At this moment, right now, I would not say I wish that one of the Supreme Court justices was get hit by a bus, specifically one of the five in the majority. I wouldn't say that. But let's say it happens, okay? Or
yes.
Let's just say they get, a really bad chest cold and they decide, I should resign.
Yes.
And so in that instance, and if President Obama or President Sanders or President Clinton or President O'Malley or, you know, whoever we choose, President Michael Moore gets nominated at the convention, if those persons have the opportunity to appoint a fifth judge and let's say this legislation was to pass, or I'm reading about some states that are trying to impose sort of their own version of this on some level.
Yep, Connecticut.
That case is going to go to the Supreme Court. If the Supreme Court is made up as it is now, okay, then what's going to happen is that ruling, which you and I disagree with, which many legal scholars disagree with, is going to get edified. They're going to take that case and they're going to edify that right. It's going to be another case that's going to cement the individual right, and there's not enough. They're going to balance states' interests versus that constitutional right, and they're going to say there isn't enough due process involved in that terror watch list to no-fly list, to strip those people of that right. Now, in the other scenario, where let's say Scalia gets out there and he realizes like his true calling is to be a host on Fox News, and he's thinking like, I only have so much time left in my life and YOLO, and so I'm going to go and do it. I'm going to go to be that Fox and I'm going to step down.
I like the use of YOLO, by the way.
Exactly. I'm going to step down. President Obama appoints a justice who's going to vote with the four. And that gives the opportunity for that case, for that individual right to be diminished through a legal. Then maybe I can see some value to it. I just think that it's a little bit problematic in that from a political perspective, I am certainly not above making Republicans take a vote that is difficult for them, that they're going to have to deal
and
with.
And especially
later.
The people that have been happy to take away on every other issue your due process, from the Patriot Act to Guantanamo to black sites.
Right, but
to
you know, listen,
else.
I don't get too caught up in the whole hypocrisy thing, obviously, because the idea that I would promote the vote of this bill is in and of itself somewhat hypocritical based upon my beliefs. But the fact is that this is the way politics works. And if we can get a better outcome in society, on a myriad of fronts because Republicans are forced to take this difficult vote, which I think is a little bit disingenuous, but it's effective from a political perspective. I'm perfectly happy with that. I'm not, fortunately, I'm not Gandhi or Jesus or the one
Jesus?
Who will not be
the
named.
Actual Jesus or the Republican Jesus?
I'm not any of those people. So, all right, so we've had that out because I want to spend some time here talking about Donald Trump because you and I have not had the opportunity to both react to his sort of like, I mean, you know, this week.
Mainstreaming of fascism?
Yeah, I mean, look, and there's a lot of arguments of whether or not what he's saying is full on fascist. It's certainly fascistic in my mind, but what's really important is it's full on bigoted and nativist, and you know, as close to the National Front movement that we could have in this country on some level. And it is fascinating to see a couple of things. To see Republicans refuse to say, I would not vote for this guy, even though that they attempt these lukewarm distancing.
It's actually better than that, Sam. I mean, I don't want to interrupt you.
Go.
But I've loved it. They did it here in Ohio and in the newspaper, and they did it in Cincinnati and a bunch of other places. You know, where we've got Rob Portman who's up, and I loved it. It's classic Rob Portman. Oh, it's very un-American what he said. Those value, you know, that's not what we value in this country. We don't believe in religious tests. It goes against what we believe in. It's wrong. It can encourage the wrong types of behavior, blah, blah, blah. Are you still going to support him if he's a nominee? Absolutely.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, it's fun watching that whole thing play out, but all of these cowards, and I think they will have to pay for this at least to a certain degree eventually. Well, I mean, there's been a few exceptions, but for the most part, most of them will not come out and say that if he's a Republican nominee, that they will not vote for
him. Who's the exception? Who's the exception? I have yet.
I've heard a few local figures. Nobody with a big name, like state house member, you know, stuff like that.
Wow,
I have not heard anybody.
That's bold. There's a dog catcher in Iowa who said that if Trump's the nominee, I'm gonna sit this one out. I mean, it is unbelievable how much. I mean, Jack Schaefer wrote a piece of garbage that somehow Donald Trump is bringing the country together because of the renouncement of him. The fact of the matter is. Honestly,
I'm not. Is that the best slate piece? That's the best slate piece in the world, isn't it? I mean,
yes.
I've got a counter argument,
but it's not even
Trump
a counter.
Awesome.
But here's the thing: it's not factual. It's not even factual. I mean, it's one thing to have a different perspective on a certain reality that's going on, but the reality is, the only difference that people are saying with Trump about his proposal is a completely technocratic one. It is a completely technocratic argument. It is no difference than somebody saying, I'm going to protect Social Security. I think we need to have cuts in the cost of living increase. That's the level of difference between this argument that they're having with Trump. It's like any other campaign. But the thing is, the mainstream media is completely ignoring that. It is completely ignoring it, pretending like that he's been denounced. He has not been denounced. That's not a denouncement.
Nope.
That's just candidates running against each other saying, I have a different proposal, period.
Oh,
that's
absolutely.
It.
And even Senate candidates or House candidates or members, Senate members who are, saying, I disagree, that's wrong, blah, blah, blah. But in the end, I disagree, that's wrong. As you just pointed out, they say that all the time. I mean, even they say this is beyond the pale. If you really want to prove this is beyond the pale, it has to be this is beyond the pale. Everyone should vote for Hillary Clinton or Bernie Sanders over him if he's our nominee.
Right.
Because what he's saying is un-American. As much as I disagree with the views of Hillary Clinton and Bernie Sanders, at least what they're saying stands up for American values. That's what you would do. That's what Margaret Chase Smith did with McCarthy. When he got up in the 1950s, Republican senator from Maine, Margaret Chase Smith, and had got, I think, additional four or five Republican senators to sign on and censure McCarthy and rebuke him and call him out and say that he didn't, I don't have all the language in front of me. But it was harsh stuff. That's what
they will not. Not only will they not censure and rebuke this guy, they won't even promise not to vote for him for president. I mean, this is going that much further. I mean, the argument that they're having with Trump is the functional equivalent of Trump saying, like, I'm going to build a super tall wall. And then Rubio saying, well, I disagree with that. I'm actually going to build my wall 10 feet down. And somebody else saying, that's a ridiculous plan. It's never going to work. I'm going to have electronic monitoring. And our wall is going to be electronic. And we're going to send laser beams right across. You don't have to build a wall. That's crazy.
No.
That's crazy talk. And
well, it's what you and I have been saying from the beginning is what the actual difference is. The difference is very simply when we always talked about people like, oh, the Tea Party wing and whatever. And, we were always said, well, it's just about who has better. One group has better media training but believes the same stuff. Well, here, that's the only difference. You know, some of the other guys like Jeb Bush and others who said we give preference to Christians coming in. It's really not so far from saying that. And many of them are probably thinking, I'm sure a whole bunch of them. You think Steve King is thinking the same thing? You know, I'm sure a whole bunch of them are thinking the same thing as Trump. The only difference is they haven't come out and said it yet.
And,
but he went a step further, and he said something that you're only supposed to imply and right. wink about.
And I'm curious as to what, like, we should start some type of, like, I don't know how to actually organize something like this in terms of a pool. I wouldn't know how to do this. But what is it that Donald Trump could say? What is it that Donald Trump could propose that would cause any of the Republican candidates running for president, that would cause any of the Republican leaders in the Senate or the House, any of the Republican leaders in the Republican establishment, what is it that Donald Trump could do or say or propose that would get them to say, I'm not going to vote for Donald Trump. I can't vote for him. I'm not going to vote for Hillary, but I cannot vote for him even.
Nothing.
Well, no, there is something.
I think he could say that.
Michael
Michael
has it.
I'm in favor of necrophilia. And they'd all say,
I don't think that would be
dead.
It. I don't think that would be it.
No,
I think
it
wouldn't.
I'm saying that wouldn't be it. They'd still say he's very tough on the dead. We like him. He would have to insult one of the core Republican groups. If he said he hated evangelicals, then maybe. You know what I mean? But he would have to go directly after one of the core Republican groups. That's the only way.
No, there's one thing. There is one statement, and Michael has already found it. It is,
he's gay.
I respect President Obama personally.
Oh, that might work. That might
President
work.
Obama's
he
done a great job.
Hug.
He's been a fantastic president. That's the only thing he could say. And the day that Donald Trump says that is the day that you know he wants to get out of the race.
Exactly.
Now, he's never going to say that.
He would say evangelical Christianity is just stupid. Who can believe such crap? If he were to go on some sort of a rant like that against the actual base of the Republican Party, then yes. But as long as he's insulting out groups that the Republicans, at least in their minds, don't think they need, or they don't need, at least in gerrymandered seats in certain states, but, you know, the ones for president will get an interesting awakening from that. Then they don't care. If he's hitting Muslims, he's making fun of the New York Times reporter who's disabled, screw him. Most of them don't vote for us anyhow. It's kind of like the old, James Baker line, which is I won't use a second curse on your show again, but I'll substitute a word, screw the Jews, they don't vote for us anyhow. It's that kind of thing.
And what should be clear at this point, and we keep repeating this over and over again, but this is another data point for that. This is NBC Wall Street Journal released a survey yesterday. 57% of people disagree with Trump's plan, and 25% say they agree with it. Okay? Now, I said people. Now, there is a subset of people that is non-normal, non-normal people, or what we call Republicans. And 42%.
They have a whole different view.
That's right. A plurality. 42% said they support the proposal. 36% are opposed it. Okay? The other, I don't know.
I saw one much worse than that, Sam. I'm trying to think which it was. It was a respectable poll, because I looked at it at the time. What I saw was 65% agreed with him. I mean, I don't know if they
65% of Trump voters agree with him on that. 65%
is that
of
what
Trump,
it was?
Yes.
Was a Republican?
But a plurality of Republicans, them, almost half of the Republicans.
And a third of them said they were more likely to vote for him.
Yes.
That actually made them like him more.
75% of Democrats,
sure Trump,
55% of independents, a group that generally just, is really just another way of saying like a Republican, but I don't want to, I want to pretend like I'm independent and I'm just, it's just, I get the facts and I decide. They are opposed. Yeah. So what the bottom line is, and I also have another poll that from November, before he even said that, before he even said that, showed that refugees and Republicans were against the idea of Syrian refugees. And if a GOP-leaning voter supports deportation, 47% support the deportation of all undocumented immigrants and oppose accepting refugees from Syria. That is a plurality of Republicans were already holding these positions. I've been saying this over and over again. The suit was basically has been tailored for years, and Donald Trump just walked into it, and now he's getting that support. It is fascinating.
That's it. And you know, it's fascinating when you compare it back to where the establishment of the party was, you know, when a Phil Gramm or somebody who probably isn't even that right wing by today's standards, but came along, you know, Steve Forbes to challenge Bob Dole in 96. And there was still an actual real party there that could respond and raise money quickly and get the, you know, and get the endorsements that would help and not hurt as they would today and all that stuff. The kind of stuff that would that Jeb Bush still thought somehow existed in this party. But as they've you know, delved more and more into flat out racism, flat out misogyny, and all the rest, it becomes a smaller and smaller, louder and louder pool. That is what they've done, and they've done it on purpose. And so it's gotten to the point now where, you know, there isn't a party anymore. Anybody can run, as Robert Rice said when he talked to a Republican he negotiated with. So he said a mainstream conservative during the Clinton administration. The guy basically said, there is no party. Anybody can run. These guys are all cuckoo. And then Rice basically said, what happened? And the guys, you know, the former congressman's response was, what happened was Rush Limbaugh, Fox News, the Koch brothers, yep. He named a few other things. He's like, they poisoned the American mind and destroyed the Republican Party. They turned on a virus in people, because there are plenty of people that would walk around. It's not just all evil, you know, good and bad, as people on the right want to pretend, because that makes life easier. It's not like when fascists come to power, people already have those views. They become leaders. And, I mean, people already have the susceptibility to those views, but they prey on that. They prey on the weakness. They prey on the fear. They prey on the anxiety, and they get them there. And that is what they've been doing for years, and that's what this guy, Trump's done, is taken it to that next step. And so now, when you're talking about the establishment of the party, I mean, it's laughable, because I've done this exercise a couple of times, and it always comes out to the same thing, which is, it doesn't matter where the numbers are. If Ted Cruz is up higher or a little bit lower, if Trump is up higher, if Ben Carson's up higher, but if you take the crazy wing of the party vote, you take the Trump, Fiorina, Huckabee, Santorum, Carson, Cruz part of the vote, it always equals roughly between 70% and 75%. Right. And if you take the other stuff, which is supposed to be moderate, you know, Chris Christie, who locks people on bridges and doesn't let them off, and Jeb Bush, who passed Stand Your Ground and stirred the whole Terry Schiavo thing.
Religious test for right. refugees, and Rubio, who would right. Ban abortion, even in the case of a woman's life.
Yes, that's the moderate wing these days. So Rubio, Bush, Christie, and I feel like I'm missing a fourth person that would fit into that, Kasich, they all add up to about 20-25%. So what that means in reality is that you can't take back over if you're the quote-unquote establishment, because Cruz and Trump could realistically, if everybody else fell to the side, they could split the vote right down the middle, and then you'd still have each of them at 35% or so, and they could come in first and second. So when people say, oh, well, you know, Cruz will if he stays in, he'll stop Trump, or Trump stays in, he'll stop Cruz, you know, they'll undermine the other ones because they'll be taking their votes. There's more than enough votes there for two people to be in the top two spots, maybe even three.
And Ted Cruz, now understand what's happening now.
He's going to win. Remember, I've been saying that for a long time, it's going to be Cruz. For months now, it will be Cruz.
I think there's a very good chance of that. In fact, let's go. Let's play this audio. Back, somebody sent me this. I had forgotten about it, but I was happy to be reminded. Back in, it was exactly to the day. It was January 12th of 2015, 11 months ago. We were talking about the chance that Mitt Romney may come in to the race. But basically, the dynamic that we have, and Ted Cruz, there's audio now of Ted Cruz basically talking to supporters and donors, mapping out what he sees is his path to the nomination. And I guess I don't know when Ted Cruz was saying this. It was the other day. But this is me back in January when we were talking about the idea that because of how many people were going to get into the race, there could be a path for a guy like Cruz coming from the crazy caucus. Here it is.
Yep.
And I will say this, you know, I keep, you know, I want to make, I want to sort of lay down a marker here because I've said this, I think, a couple of times on this program. I said it on Hayes's program, I think a week or two ago. I really think that this could be the year where we finally get one from the crazy caucus, the full-on crazy caucus, right? Romney had to move way to the right in the 2012 campaign during the primary, and he really never tacked back. He really had to, and I think the guys, I don't know. I mean, he's not as, he doesn't care about birth control, let's say, the way that Rick Santorum does, but he had to go there. And, of course, John McCain, who also really, at the end of the day, they just care about themselves, had to choose Sarah Palin. I think we're going to see someone from that end of the spectrum. It's not going to be Sarah Palin is the Hail Mary. Sarah Palin or her ilk, I think, could very well be the nominee. And this is where it's headed. And at one point, we will get to that point.
It's going to be, have you spoken to a David Duke forum? Not maybe I did, maybe I didn't.
Right.
It's going to become the next litmus test.
Right. That's right. We're going to see someone controversially pick a John McCain as vice president.
And so there it is. I mean, that was back in 11 months ago now. And, you know,
you
I think it's happening. Yes, I did. I sounded so much younger at that time. And no, just to hear, so here, I just want to put the cherry on top. Ted Cruz tweeted a couple hours ago, because now we're seeing the establishment meet together to try and figure out this disaster they have. We're already starting to see the pieces, the think pieces being written. Donald Trump has made Ted Cruz palatable to the establishment. Ted Cruz knows this is happening. He knows he can see the support coming to him slowly. He wants to pace himself. He wants to hang back. He still wants to draft behind these people. And so he tweets out there today, "The establishment's only hope, Trump and me in a cage match. Sorry to disappoint. At real Donald Trump is terrific. Hashtag deal with it."
Yep. That's the thing, is that there's more than, even if that did happen, again, there's more than enough for both of them. All that this was going to take, because of the way that party has been circling down the drain, you know, for 20, 25 years now, to do an ever smaller, you know, yes chorus of crazy people, is that there was going to be enough room for at least one, if not two of these guys, if not three at this point. And the end result is going to be, I still think it will be, you know, what Cruz has that Trump doesn't have is what Cruz has apparently put together an amazing ground team in Iowa and beyond. He's got the evangelicals who, without him in the race, maybe would have gone for Trump, even though they know Trump's just saying what they want to hear to win, but they trust in more in Cruz. And, you know, the Cruz and Trump are what the crazy right needed. They're two, at least if you're a crazy right winger, relatively charismatic characters. Trump is a, you know, the guy that says what he thinks, and Cruz is a very good debater. And, you know, they both come off like a-holes to most of the rest of us. But within that world, they are charismatic guys in a way, obviously, that Ben Carson and Rand Paul will never be.
Right.
So that they when you check off the charisma box, you check off the field presence that Cruz has, that he's gone for evangelicals and landed them, and then you throw in the fact that his fundraising has been pretty astounding. I'm sure a lot of it's small dollar lunatics. But outside of Bush, he's had the second best fundraising haul of all the Republican candidates. And unlike Bush, which where it's, you know, 80% of it or whatever is super PAC, he's roughly 50-50. He's raised about $30 million through his campaign, and $30 million is in the super PAC. So he's got the money to do it too. I just, you know, and again, I saw all these things happening months ago, and I thought Trump was sort of paving the way, and all this, you know, arrows would be shot at him. And in the end, the establishment, who hates Cruz personally, but at least in sort of his background, he embodies a little much more of that than in who he's worked for and what he's done than Trump does. So they feel like they'll have more control, that that's where they're going to inevitably, they're going to throw everything behind him. Indeed. And I still think that. I think it's Ted Cruz.
All right. Well, we have a little more time, obviously, about a month and change before we get to Iowa. And I don't know. It's going to be fascinating to see what happens.
Certainly is, man. We're going to have an interesting year. But, indeed. Just hope there aren't any unprepared for natural disasters or anything a week before the election if Cruz is the nominee.
Yeah.
Because I think under normal circumstances, you know, either Bernie or Hillary would wipe the floor with Cruz under normal circumstances.
Well, more importantly, I mean, look,
many people.
Not more importantly, but just as importantly, or I should say most particularly important about, and I know, you know, I'm going to anticipate people's sort of like frustration that we're spending so much time talking about this. Because, look, the bottom line is, whoever the president is, and I believe it's either going to be Hillary Clinton or Bernie Sanders, because I don't think there's a republic that can defeat either one of them, and I don't know which one of them is going to be the nominee.
I agree, under normal circumstances, as long as something
crazy,
that's my only concern.
But the real issue is that president going to have a Democratic Senate? So when it comes to things like a Supreme Court nomination, is that going to be an issue? And the other question is, are we going to see enough of a down ticket sort of like anchor, if you will, from the top of the ticket, that we actually see Democrats take over some state houses, that we see Democrats take over a couple? I don't think they'll take over the House, but I think they could win a couple of congressional seats. But more importantly, even those state houses, and begin to start the redistricting,
there's governor's race in North Carolina. There's one in Indiana. There's some in some important states where we could stop the worst of what they're doing, kind of like we've been able to do in West Virginia and Montana and a few other states where they have absolutely terrible state legislatures. But by getting a Democrat in office, we've been able to stop the worst of what they've wanted to do.
Indeed.
You know,
and of
Pennsylvania,
course,
since we governed of what's his name, too. So.
Right. You look at what happened. Something like Kentucky, where, you know, you're going to have hundreds of thousands people who could lose their health insurance, their Medicaid because of it.
That's all important.
That's why they're such important.
In Louisiana, that's why it was important in Louisiana, too. That we took
for the opposite reason.
That guy's a blue dog, and I don't love him. But, you know, he came right out and said he'd get people Medicaid, and, you know, that's pretty damn important. So,
Cliffy, always
you're
a pleasure.
Right. We'll see what happens, man. It's going to be interesting.
Talk to you soon.
Thanks, buddy.
All right. Now, ladies and gentlemen, let us... we have a song from Jimmy Reefer Cake, which we will play while we get Andy Kindler on the phone. Matt, can you tell me what that song is?
It is All the Hypocrisy, and in parentheses, Trump.
It is Trump. You know what? Let's do this. Let's play a different song. And then when I get Andy on the phone so he can hear it as we bring him in, we'll play it. So play like 30 seconds of another song, and then we'll play the Jimmy Reefer Cake song, okay, so that we can come out with it. All right, folks, take a quick break. We'll be right back with Andy Kindler.
On 911, Trump saw on TV Muslims on the roofs in New Jersey. The Twin Towers fell, he said they cheered Allahu Akbar. No Muslims allowed, he tells the crazies, hypocrites, lunatics, and neo-Nazis who gathered around the billionaire carnival barker. All the hypocrisy, all the hypocrisy, all the hypocrisy, all the hypocrisy. Because Trump thinks they've cheered on the Muslim roof, As to your religion, he now wants the proof. He's a fascist pig who deserves to be called a Nazi. What would Jesus do? Trump doesn't care with his squinty eyes and ridiculous hair. He's so full of crap and absolute pure hypocrisy. All the hypocrisy. All the hypocrisy. All the hypocrisy. All the hypocrisy.
Yes, Jimmy Reefer Cake from Clinton. Perhaps not coincidentally from allthehypocrisy.com. A beautiful adaptation. Was that Leonard Cohen? I'm not quite sure. But be that as it may, ladies and gentlemen, that's not the only thing he's done. Jimmy Reefer Cake is also very well known for the theme song that introduces our next most anticipated guest. Let's hear that theme song.
With a Jew like Andy Kindler, you know you can't go wrong. His ancestors wrote the God Bless America song. But you Obama bot, Andy believes Obama can never be wrong. Yeah, AndyKindler.com. You made me laugh so hard, I had to write you your own theme song. Andy Kindler.
Yes, ladies and gentlemen. Andy, welcome to the show. Congratulations on your ancestors writing God Bless America. I am really, we can't thank you enough.
You don't know that Irving Berlin is actually my, I can't sell that. Was that Irving Berlin?
You know, I don't
know. What a Jewish name that was.
Irving Berlin. Well, there was a time.
Jimmy Reefer, those are the two greatest songs I've ever heard. And if I am ever, if they round us up again, I won't be able to get With a Jew Like Andy Kindler out of my head. I'll be humming that.
You know, that's the thing. It's a tribute. But it's also conceivably could be the thing that someday gets you sent to the camps. Right? When they come in. I don't know if you've been watching A Man from the High Tower or the Man in the High Castle.
I was just picturing a scenario where Andy somehow evades them discovering he's Jewish until they hear that song.
That's the most ridiculous thing I've heard in my life.
You can pass, right? I mean, you pass sometimes.
Well, let me tell you something. I in a second would claim to be Italian. I would have turned in every actor during the blacklist. There wouldn't have been one name. I saw Ernest Borgnine. I think he's a communist. Can I go? Can I go now?
What would you have taken down? Let me just ask you. Let's just do this Man in the High Castle scenario. This is the show from the Amazon. That is about what if the Germans essentially and the Japanese won the war and America was half occupied by Germans and Nazis and the other half by the Japanese.
Have to have Amazon Prime to get to see this show?
No, you can go and just order it.
Okay.
So, Andy, how would you pass? I'm curious. Like, what you're trying to be Italian. What would you do?
I say, hey, I don't know, man. I hate those Jews too, but I don't know. If I could turn into, look, I wish I was a Jew so you'd have someone to round up, but it's just not true.
Hey, I'm a guy from New York. Paisan.
Yeah. Hey,
there you go.
Hey, scascasapuce, scasabaduccia.
All right,
Mussolini.
So I wanted that just as a public service. For anybody thinking that you could hide in Andy's attic, not the place to hide.
No,
I think you're. I think
as soon as they come in, as soon as they come in, I'm pointing up with my finger.
Yeah, at that point. At that point, really, honestly, if that's how you're going to pass, the best thing you could say is like, didn't you hear the Jimmy Reefer Cake song? What Jew would actually allow that to happen? It's a joke.
I was picturing like, hey, there's this friggin' annoying Jew brought up in my attic. Her name's Ed. Go get her.
Why?
That's Italian. That's Italian.
That's Italian. Yeah,
it's Italian. Italian. Except for it was Andrew Dice Clay, Jew.
Well, whatever.
Right.
Andrew Dice Clay. Another
Jew.
He's a
Jew.
He's
Italian.
Did you ever, Andy, did you ever, like, when Andrew Dice Clay, I know he was multiple generations before you. You're a very young man. But were you as a young comic? Were you a young comic in the shadow of Andrew Dice Clay?
Yeah, because we did such similar. I was very in your face like him, and I was a Jewish misogynist. Was my moniker.
That was your,
which was not very popular.
Hickory dickory dock.
Yeah, hey, Orthodox lady, get on the other side of the temple.
You know what? I mean, I want to hear, like, I have to say that.
Ow! I'm not having sex through a sheet. Ow!
Was that where your first gigs were? Were they? Because I don't think, you know, like I don't know if I ever had a sense. Like, I don't think I met you until I was out, I think, living with Sarah 20 years ago out in L.A. And I think she introduced me to you. But I don't think I ever knew you in. I mean, did you start in New York? I don't think I know your early beginnings as a comic. And I did not, forgive me, listen to your WTF episode.
You ever heard when Studs Terkel interviewed me?
I don't remember that, Studs Terkel.
In the early 70s?
I think I tried to listen to it at the Library of Congress, but I didn't have the right pass, I think.
I started comedy in 84 in a duo. I'm from New York, but I moved to L.A. right after college because I wanted to be a musician. So I started comedy out here.
What? I didn't know that. What do you play? Yeah. What kind of music do you play?
I play guitar and I write songs. I was one of only 4 million singer-songwriter guitarists who moved to California in 78.
What kind of songs? Do you have copies of those songs?
Unpopular ones.
Well, those are the ones I'm interested in.
I played everything. You know, I was influenced from, at that time, I was very into the Talking Heads and the Police. But I started on Dylan and the Beatles and.
Do you have any recordings?
I do have recordings, but it would probably take me a couple of days to transfer them from Edison Spools.
I mean,
I was in bands. I was
fascinated
in top 40 bands,
to hear what top 40 bands.
We had the worst name was The Visitors.
Now, did
we're
you
not
ever?
The home team.
Is there an album?
We're
can I go out and buy an album?
Yes, you can.
Oh my God!
You can, and then you could take that album, and I could recut it. No, I did some. I'm proud of some stuff I did, but I'd be embarrassed to play for anybody.
Oh my God!
I used to play. I played it in the 90s. I did like Comedians Who Write Songs at Largo a couple of times, and people are still not talking about it.
Out of respect for you, or just because of the trauma?
Some people enjoy. I like what I do.
And listen,
but I never did any humor song. I used to take my guitar on the road in the 80s, and I would tell the other comics, "Don't worry, don't worry. It's not in my act." That's how terrible comedy was.
Yes.
In the 80s. Don't worry, I'm not going to do parodies.
That was tough. But there's some people who made their bones that way, though, right?
Well, but that's the thing now. When I, you know, like, I love Fly of the Conchords. I love, you know, right. I love Alan Sherman. I love Jimmy Reaper Cake. But back in the 80s, you could just, everything was
well, that's what Zach Galifianakis
horrible.
Basically broke through by playing his piano songs, right? I'm not kidding.
Well, I went to a show with him, or like a stage thing, and he did a joke and it didn't get a laugh, and I said, maybe you don't recognize that joke without the piano accompaniment, and everyone laughed.
There you go.
But so, I love him though.
No, I listen. Oh, you do. Okay.
Don't get me in trouble with people I actually like. No, but he just tinkles around. He doesn't even.
Right.
I don't think he knows even what he's doing. But it sounds okay.
Well, you know, are you familiar with Benjamin's album? We just had him on last week. He just put out a jazz album. Have you not heard it?
Is it actual jazz or?
Yeah. Do you want to play? Do we have a clip of it? New Matt is going to find a clip of Benjamin's jazz album. He was playing with very accomplished jazz musicians, and it's pretty surprising. Do you have it? Okay, we're going to play a clip. You can listen to it. Here it is. This is from Benjamin's jazz album. Oh, pause it. I should tell you, Benjamin's on the piano. Good. Okay. I mean, I'm not a huge fan of jazz.
You're not a huge fan of jazz. That is better than Woody Allen, though, at Lane's or wherever he used to go.
Yeah, Benjamin's Benjamin cut an entire album entitled I Should Have.
He didn't do it. It's not an entire album.
It's an entire album, yeah. It is about 40 minutes. And
you mean every joke is he comes in with a terrible piano?
That's the whole album. It's entitled I Should Have Learned to Play the Piano. And it's a 40-minute jazz album released by Sub Pop.
It is very funny. It is very funny. I'm wondering, would that sustain for 40 minutes? Meanwhile, I can't even sustain on stage for a half hour without people shuffling.
I mean, if you don't care so much about the piano in your jazz music, I think you could actually listen to it.
Well, the band is good behind
it. The band is great. Apparently, they were a little bit miffed.
Oh, you can't tell me they're not in on the joke.
Well, I mean, they showed up and, you know, when they were recording, but they just wanted to get paid, I think.
It's like the Smile Sessions, but without any of the genius attached.
Right. That's the, I think that was, Benjamin was sort of selling it that way. It's like a great jazz album without any of the talent and respect for music.
Did nobody in there knows about Smile? Is that what I'm getting from the silence in your studio?
So
Brian Wilson?
Oh,
hello?
Right. Yes, of
that's
course. I saw that movie.
That's your new catchphrase, Andy?
Hello?
Hello?
Now, Andy, I got a bone to pick with you, all right? I don't want to get into like a
please
because you know how much I love you. But
I wrote down that you said, this suit was tailored years ago, or you said today or something.
Yes, I did.
That was good.
Thank you.
I like your predictions that you record every morning before today's show to pretend that you said something back in the old days.
That's right. That's right. Actually, I wish I could go and record right now, like put you on just pause, record. Like I predict that Andy's going to say
Andy will bomb.
No, but wait a second.
Evergreen.
Listen, I'm a little bit hurt. Okay.
Okay.
Because, you know, this happens to me all the time. Where friends of mine come into town. I went and I just like did a news search for Andy Kindler. And of course it's like Andy Kindler is mad at Chris Rock. Andy Kindler is mad at but then I see New York Today. Andy Kindler performs an evening of stand-up at Union Hall in Park Slope. And then I look at the date
I
see November 27th, 2015. And I think, what's going on?
What's wrong?
What happened? And
I
did
have
you
no
play
excuse.
There?
I don't even have. I did play there, and I could have comped you. Your as a Jew, you would have been shaking with anticipation, knowing that you had a free ticket awaiting you. You wouldn't have had to have paid. I would have given you a carte blanche, or Diners Club.
Yes.
Good night, everybody. Please put your discovery card in the bowl.
You're
making it even worse.
I'm hurt, Andy.
And Michael, too. I didn't even tell Michael I was coming.
Well, that I understand. But I'm...
No, it's wrong. I feel so terrible.
I got to tell you. All right. Now, but let me just say that. That said, I was actually visiting family, so I wasn't even in town.
Don't you read my Twitter feed constantly? I thought that was what Twitter
works. Well, to be honest with you, I did see that on the Twitter feed, but I thought it would be more dramatic because you're in the New York Times, for God's sakes. I'm looking at it from the New York Times. I wanted to pump you up.
You are an expert guilt spieler.
Oh, well, thank
you. It's unbelievable.
No, of course. Yeah, no, I was aware of it, but I was away.
Not for anybody.
I saw you playing bocce ball. You were playing bocce ball during my show.
Well, I imagine that happens a lot. It's a very small room.
I don't know. I love that room because
It's a very small room. I mean, aren't you from New York?
You give me a 40-seater?
Aren't you from New York? I mean, I would imagine I was sort of surprised. I mean,
I could draw anybody?
I thought like Beacon Theater for you.
Oh, yeah. Yes. If I have remember this, in Siskel and Ebert, their slogan was, the balcony's closed? That's what happens when I play a theater. The balcony is closed.
The balcony.
Because no tickets have been sold.
Well, so now, Andy, what else is going on in your life?
Nobody remembers Siskel and Ebert. Well, first of all, who told you about the Muslims? I told you. You said Muslims, schmuslims to me when I brought it up. You with your white, upper class, I don't need this tribalistic nonsense in my life. I warned you about Bill Maher. You said, no, the guy is reasonable.
No, that's not true.
He seems like a nice feller. But everyone made fun of me online. I think it may be because I'm strident and won't let stuff go, but I think it was because I was an early adopter of Watch Out.
When is Bill Maher? No, I'm with you. And you and I, when is Bill Maher going to have you on the program? Is he ever going to do it or no? Is he just so mad?
I would never go on that show.
You would never go on, even to argue with him.
No, I fantasize about that two ways. I fantasize about how I say, well, I'm not saying I'm, sexually, but I do say, I can't even get a laugh.
No,
referencing
no, it's
sex.
Just that. No,
we had a lot of people laugh. Go ahead.
No, I think in my head, I say I would never go on his show because I hate. I used to watch that show years ago. Mm-hmm. But I say I don't want to go on his show because I hate him and I don't want to be in his environment arguing with him. And then the other part of me says, what if I just take the gig when they call it? But I think I would never go on the show. Mm. But that just shows you how much I'm worried that I wouldn't stand up for myself. He doesn't invite on anybody who disagrees with him normally.
Yes, that's my understanding. Now, so what else? What's going on with Andy? Are you gearing up to do a series of television or what?
Yeah, a lot of these shows are on Amazon, like Amazon Prime. Uh-huh. I just signed a deal with UPS Ground. I just pitched something at the FedEx Saturday delivery yesterday. It's called Do Not Ship Blood. It's a reality show.
Do Not Ship Blood. That's pretty
good. I've got nothing, Sam. Everybody I started out with, every single person I started out with has their own show right now and are on billboards within 3 blocks of my house.
You know, I got to say, you and I, I went out to have a drink the other night with Benjamin, and it was unbelievable to me how many people stopped him. And I thought, like, oh, my God. Now, like, literally, everyone I know and go out and have a drink with is now famous, and it's sort of crazy.
I have to really do a 360 as I'm walking, and it has to be in Queens, where everybody loves Raymond reruns are still popular for me to be recognized. I mean, I gotta make eye contact to the point where it's creepy for everybody.
People are not sure if you're the person that they actually reported.
I kind of forced myself on a lot of people.
So wait a second. So,
you were looking at me, weren't you?
Now, my understanding is that you were up for one of those for a series on the taxi cab channel or something like that. Was that right?
Is that the taxicab confessions?
No, just the one that actually plays in the New York City taxicabs.
Oh, I love the one they go, hey, I'm John Rebus, put your seatbelt on.
What? So, but wait, so, I mean, you must be busy, Andy. I mean, come on, you're a huge talent. People are constantly...
Well, you asked me yesterday if I could be on the show today. You could have asked me at 9:32 LA time.
Well, I'm sorry.
No, I'm
at 9 in the
down
morning.
For the holidays.
It's at 9 in the morning. No one like yourself who goes out to clubs every night and lives the nightlife is going to be awake. I know you get up early for this.
Oh, well, let's not kid ourselves. I have meetings from noon on. Let's not. I mean, let's not gild the lily. No, I mean, things are. I slowed down in December because my wife is a Christian. Sorry, ladies. And I like putting classic lines in front of nothing.
Yeah.
And I love Christmas. I know
you broke a lot of hearts. You broke a lot of hearts when you said that.
Sorry, ladies.
Yeah.
And I love Christmas, and we do family things. So I always slow down. But the only thing, except, of course, I do a New Year's Eve gig every year where they pass out, and I say, please pass out the noisemakers at 11:45.
That's when you go on stage, right? Like a 20 of?
Yeah, and they say, first thing, folks, let me hear if those noisemakers are loud enough to disrupt every part of my comedy.
So what do you do for Christmas? I know you give everybody justcoffee.coop using your 10% coupon code majority to get the coffee, the Majority Report blend. But then what?
Well, I heard one year, and I hope it's true, that Arsenio Hall gave out, he just for Christmas, just gave out snow globes that said Hollywood on it to all of his staff. Wouldn't that be great if it was true?
I sometimes will give like old headshots of myself to people for, but framed. To be fair, framed. So there's some work that's going on.
I give people DVDs of my one concert film.
John Benjamin's kid has received like 40 copies of Who's the Caboose for Hanukkah from me over the years. Just keep giving them DVDs. So wait. Do you
go? This is a month where I reflect. Oh no, I have people over the house. We have people. My wife's mom and sister come over.
Okay. Do they live out? They live out in California or no?
They live in San Diego. I live in Los Angeles.
All right.
Then I do an hour of mother-in-law jokes, which everyone loves.
Right. That's is that when they say, "We're so glad you married a Jew"?
Well, I'll never forget. Henny Youngman did this commercial where he said. I went on a pleasure trip. That sounds like Rodney. I went on a pleasure trip. I took my mother-in-law to the airport. And I was thinking, there's not one thing in that either of those sentences that would make any sense to anybody now. A pleasure trip? Or that you'd be upset with your mother-in-law?
I know. That's true. I guess that's true. I wonder what happened to that. I guess people just don't actually deal with their in-laws as much.
They don't like the classics anymore, Sam. That's the problem. That's why I can't work. There's no Catskills. I don't have a place I can drive 2 hours from the... I can't go... I'm not at the Neveli this weekend, Sam.
Went to the Neveli as a kid. I remember.
Oh, my God.
You're doing a Jerry Seinfeld there, aren't you?
No, I can't believe that you... So when you went... Was there still? It was still somewhat going on.
I mean, this was
right?
This was probably 35 years ago, maybe 30 years ago. I went. I remember. I might have been like 12, 13, 14, and I stayed in like a small room playing basketball the whole time. That's all I did. I don't remember anything else. It wasn't even full court. It was just like literally like the old boiler room, and they put a basketball hoop in there.
It was not like Dirty Dancing?
No, it was not. My experience was not like Dirty Dancing. No.
Maybe I heard even the food wasn't that good. I heard even the food wasn't that good.
I don't remember, but I don't remember what the food was like. So, all right, let me ask you this. Let's just briefly. Okay. I want to get your take your temperature here. Trump, Ted Cruz. Now, Trump, you grew up with Trump, right? I mean, he's your guy.
Well, the story.
You guys are both from Queens, right? Aren't you?
Well, my dad used to be a gas heating contractor. He used to put like boilers in buildings. And he complained about Trump. He couldn't stand Trump. Trump was a client of his, And you hear people all the time on the news say this, oh, he never pays his bills. He never pays his bills, and my dad couldn't stand him. So as a joke, and I think it was the 80s or the 90s, as a joke, we got my dad the Art of the Deal board game, and we thought it was hilarious. And we were just couldn't wait to see his face when he opened it up because he couldn't stand Trump. He opens it up and he says, why'd you get me this? Because you hate Trump. He goes, yes, I hate him. And then we were like, hey, the old man's losing it. And then a week later, we said to ourselves, what's wrong with us? Why would we think? What was the joke there exactly?
Well, no, I think
was so funny.
You know, what's fascinating is that it's almost like your comedy career plays out that dynamic.
You mean where nobody gets the joke?
Yeah, you deliver this joke that you're excited about, and everybody's just like, why did you do that?
No. I am a comic's comic. If I got a good reaction to the joke, it would mean the joke was not properly tailored for the one guy in the back of the room who knows I'm not going anywhere.
But isn't that what happened? You deliver.
He can laugh.
You give your dad the art of the deal, and who laughs? Only right. Your sister, right? Was it your sister, your brother, or what?
Well, it was me and my sister. We thought it was the funniest.
That's
gift
what I'm
ever.
Saying. That's the exact dynamic, right? Your dad's the audience. Your sister is the comic right. At the back of the room, and that's played out your entire career.
Yeah, but my dad normally would be an excellent crowd.
Oh, really?
Because he was very funny, so we knew that it was just a terrible joke.
So was he playing a joke on you when he said that, or no?
No. He just was like...
He was pissed.
It may have been... I think he was basically saying, well, maybe it was funny in your brain, the idea of presenting me with a gift that I would not want on any level. I see how that was hilarious.
We only have a minute left here, but I want to ask this question of you. Was your dad happy that you became a comedian?
He was happy because I was a musician, because he didn't get, my dad did not understand the music I played. And one time he came upstairs when I was playing and I was in my room, and he actually told me something that was true. He goes, you're from Queens. Why are you singing? I'm going a woan a schmoan a going. He pointed out that I was trying to sound like a musician. But it also discouraged me from playing guitar. So he wasn't crazy about me being a musician, but he really, because he was hilarious, he really did encourage me to be a comedian, much to the chagrin of America.
Well, I'll tell you something, Andy. I hate to end on a disagreement, but I can tell you that this little corner of America is very happy that you became a comedian.
Can I just say?
And it brings a tremendous amount of joy in Majority Report America whenever you come on this program.
Did you want to push back on that?
Yeah, I was actually just
did you, because there's not enough oxygen in the room.
Just
the
to push
optics.
Back on that, champ. No, I can't, you know what I cannot get out of my head is just an image. I won't even do the bit. But the idea, going back to the beginning of the conversation, as Andy is an Orthodox dice clay, and this is getting really elaborate, but the idea of whoever's dice's opening acts were back then, they must have just been brutalized by the audience. Get on, fuck off, you want dice? And so I'm just thinking, like, Orthodox Jews being like, get off, we want Kinder. Get this stuff on the stage. To whoever Andy's opening act was. Like just these yeshiva boys, like ranting and raving until Kindler comes out on stage.
Well, you know, I actually did play, and this might be a good closing line, which I've never had. Mm. I did play an Orthodox Jewish wedding, which is true, where the men were separated from the women, but they both came together to not enjoy what I was talking about. I'll be in Hoboken this weekend. Try the non-GMO free-range chicken.
Andy Kindler, always a pleasure. If I don't talk to you before then, gosh, I hope I do, but it's very possible I won't. Have a happy new year.
I'm available. I love you, Sam. I love you, Michael. I love you.
All right,
I love the right. And things like that.
So much.
Just push back on that for a second.
All right, bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
All right, folks. All right, we can go into the fun half now. Do another 35 minutes in the fun half. And what's going on? What's that? Kelly just stared at Michael like as soon as I said that. Like, were you pissed?
Yeah, no, sure. Take a moment, Michael. It's great. Yeah, keep going.
We're going to go to two. It's Friday.
Oh, and that time. Fuck that. Just keep talking.
Wait, it's an inside joke we have, Sam. Don't be jealous.
Well, you got to make it a little more inside because you did it right in front of me. Wow. I don't know if you know what the word inside means.
It's like an inside joke.
You telegraphed it just
stare
a little bit.
At you and make you feel uncomfortable, and then we laugh.
I didn't stare at Sam. I
stare at Michael in a way that's visible to you, and then we both laugh.
I'm
going to
do my impression of Kelly. Okay, you say we'll do another 25.
We'll go into the fun half. We'll do another 35 minutes.
All right, folks.
I'm glad to be taking some of the heat off, Michael.
Let's put a little bit of... it's unbelievable. It's a contagious. The eye roll in here. Thank you, Matt, for being a trooper, Matt.
No problem. It's all about professionalism.
That's right. It is about... That's right.
That's not what you just IM'd me.
There you go.
Matt says stuff under his breath that is
well. That's the way you do it.
Funny.
That's the way you do it.
You're
say it under your breath.
This is
Kelly's version of under breath. Like, oh, I can't believe it.
That's
all right,
literally
let's start
true.
The music. 646-257-3920. 646-257.
I can't you believe?
3920 is the number. If you want to be a part of the show, take your IMs. We'll be back next week. Don't forget, send us your best ofs, ladies and gentlemen. Send us your best ofs if you have any ideas whatsoever. At majorityreporters@gmail.com. We'll be right back.